Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This is G.R. Mobley. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. If you go to MobiusStripPress.com, you can find out how you can download these podcasts and find our support documents and links. In my inaugural broadcast, I mentioned before, welcome to, I think it was the 1,000th percent club. What is that 1,000th? And actually, it's the 100,000th percent club. I'm really bad with these fractions, so pronouncing them in a decimal point. So the percentage would be the 100,000th percent club. So what is that? That is those of you and those of us who start looking at and understanding the Constitution in the context that the framers looked at it. That it is a compact amongst the states, that it is a contract that the states have the oversight, and that they've delegated very few defined and specific powers to the Constitution. Therefore, those of us within this club and any patriot that starts to understand that this contract is not being complied to has an obligation. And where does that obligation come from? Well, let's look at the biblical term of the tribe of Levi, or not the term, but the commitment or covenant of the tribe of Levi in the Bible. The tribe of Levi had a birthright. They had a birthright to the priesthood, and if a person was of the tribe of Levi, they were to officiate in the capacity of that priesthood. Well, as citizens of this republic, as citizens of each of these independent and disparate states, and as well as the republic, we have an oath of citizenship. And that citizenship is implied. And if you've never read or have never heard the oath of citizenship, one really has to understand what we have implied to ourselves as citizens. The oath goes as this. I hereby declare on oath that I absolutely and entirely renounce and abjure all allegiance and fidelity to any foreign prince, potent, state, or sovereignty of whom or which I have heretofore been a subject or citizen, that I will support and defend the Constitution and laws of the United States of America against all enemies, foreign and domestic, that I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same, that I will bear arms on behalf of the United States when required by the law, that I will perform non-combatant service in the armed forces of the United States when required by law, that I will perform work of national importance under civilian direction when required by the law, and that I take this obligation freely without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion, so help me God. If you noticed, by the law, that implies that that law is constitutional. So if all of a sudden somebody passes a law and says that it is illegal for you to own a firearm, it is illegal for you to own a 30-round magazine or anything regarding firearms and personal defense, hunting, what have you. The fact is, unless the Constitution has been amended, and when I mean amended, that means that the Second Amendment gets reversed, stricken, repealed, or amended to where states can start dictating and infringing on everybody's individual rights to bear arms, then and only then, and oh, let me back up, the 14th Amendment, so the federal government can't arbitrarily create a law to violate the Second Amendment. The 14th Amendment, by the way, applies, if you read the 14th Amendment, Section 1, that the state shall pass no law that infringes on these immunities and privileges guaranteed by the Constitution. I'm paraphrasing, but go read it for yourself. The states cannot pass a law that will create an infringement on your ability to own, possess, bear arms, any type of weapon that we were discussing earlier, whether it be a 30 round or what have you. They have no ability. The Bill of Rights is applied to the states, which is why when one looks at the states trying to take away somebody's right of speech, when the city comes down and shuts down a person's ability to legally and peacefully protest something and they arrest you, they're violating your constitutional rights. Or if they try to take away your ability to religiously express something in the public place, whether that be a Christmas tree on your property, in front of your business, or if the city council decides to have some religious expression, there is no reason why, and as a matter of fact, it is a violation of the Constitution for us infringing on the religious expression of others. That being said, we have a duty and an obligation as citizens, as a birthright to this nation of liberty, to protect and defend it. Even though new citizens that have naturalized have to take this oath, all people are basically held to this same standard, held to this oath. It is a birthright, and that we all have to begin to start stepping up and taking this oath seriously and taking our birthright seriously. It is time that we begin having all citizens take the oath. And this is my recommendation, that we have all citizens take the oath as a reminder of their birthright and obligation as they, you know, apply to vote. When they go in and fill out the form to vote, they should take the oath that they're willing to protect and defend, that they know that they're obligated to protect and defend the Constitution against enemies, foreign and domestic. Which means if somebody wants to just create laws to violate the Constitution instead of following the Article 5 process, then you're supposed to identify that person as somebody that is subversive to the Constitution and our way of life. We cannot allow people to continue to subvert the Constitution and our contract. We can no longer allow those who seek to subvert the Constitution to have access to our process. So we should start addressing this as reasonable citizens of the Constitution. It's one thing for somebody to enjoy their liberties and freedom, but it's another thing to be actively a part of the process and being able to try to subvert it and violating it. There's no power allocated to allow a person, whether that be the president or all the bodies in Congress, to start imposing their will upon the people. The Constitution guarantees that we, the states, have the final arbitrating state or say over what is to be constitutional, what isn't to be constitutional. And if we do allow these things to start occurring, and like I stated in my last show regarding Madison's comments of how despotism starts rising from these gradual usurpations and this silence encroachment from government, if we give them this power, it's like giving the fox the key to the hen house. We cannot allow that to occur. So moving forward, how are we going to do this? We have to do this by unity. We have to move forward and unify as conservatives, as constitutionalists. There are so many different and disparate groups that it just makes my head spin. When you look at the Constitution Party, when you look at the Republican Party, you look at the Libertarian Party, most of these parties have an alliance because they believe and recognize individual liberty and sovereignty as the plan of either our creator or the founding principles of this government. Because I understand that there are some groups that are secular, but they still believe that individual sovereignty and individual liberty are the founding principles of this republic, even though our framers clearly stated that individual liberty and sovereignty was the plan of our creator, that all men were created equal and endowed by our creator inalienable rights. This means for us to unify, we have to set aside our self-interest. We also have to set aside our differences between our, you know, minutiae of these parties. The fact that these little fiefdoms, or the fact that these little cabals exist that have fractionalized this this conservative nation, because when one really looks at it, this is a very conservative nation, especially the heartland as far as a republic. There may be a few states that are way overboard on the statist communist side, and California, our friends to the south, they're the epitome of going overboard. However, if we can unify, if we can get the libertarians, the constitutionalists, the Constitution Party, these people that are voting based on principles of whether it's a biblically based candidate or what have you, if we can put these differences aside, then we can basically do what the framers were capable of doing. We have to set aside our differences. And if you, as I said in my inaugural address and broadcast, that the framers did what is so unfathomable today. They were able to put aside those religious differences. That's why they had separate states, because they wanted to do this and you do that. I'm actually coming up on a hard break, so let me close on this after the hard break. I think this is a very important, especially at this juncture, unification. So I'll be right back. Power of unity and also the power of division. As I was saying before we went into the break, because this is really important, I do not want to get off this. I think it's very important that we start holding ourselves to the standard that we have to unify. We cannot allow ourselves to be factionalized. Washington warned of this in his final address to the nation. It was a warning to the nation. As a matter of fact, many of the framers talked about parties and how they factionalized us. And I even read last week in the Madison's comments during the ratification debate how we do become factionalized, and we've allowed ourselves to try to chase some little distraction because of abortion, because of immigration. There are groups like ACT that is very myopic, and they have very noble intent. But the fact of the matter is that all of these different groups, Constitutional Party, Libertarian Party, and so forth, they actually do align under the same principles as the GOP, that we believe that our founding principles are based upon individual liberty and individual sovereignty. And if we do not unify and start voting across the board amongst that party that has those fundamental principles, regardless of these other obscure parties that have such a small faction, that we are allowing ourselves to be divided over these minutiae. Remember, I said at the very beginning, the problem that we're facing as a constitutional crisis is not about immigration. It is not about Islam. It is not about abortion. It is about compliance to the contract. And so we have to unify. We have to start bringing in all of these disparate ideologists that have these little factions that they're going off on, and accepting the fact that we've been losing this battle. I will say this, that the last 4 years of the injection of Islam into this nation and the bloodshed that has occurred over these last 4 years because of this, and because we've allowed the enemy within to do this, I am telling you, the people have blood on their hands because they have allowed themselves to be factionalized over whatever principle they want to justify. I don't care how you do it, you're justifying in allowing and not unifying on the fundamental principles of individual liberty and individual sovereignty. So that said, there are some wolf in sheep's clothing that are within this Republican Party that don't necessarily believe in individual liberty and individual sovereignty. Let's just, for an example, say that a president that is elected by the Republican Party becomes a despot and a statist and tries to start injecting his rule like all the other presidents from the Republican Party before, going all the way back to Teddy Roosevelt and even before that to Lincoln. there have been plenty of cases where the president has stepped on and or overreached his boundaries of the Constitution. And so we as a party have to hold their feet accountable, whether they're the president, the governor, or what have you. We have to go through the impeachment process. We have to make sure and guard our plank with vigor. We have to ensure that it aligns to the Constitution, and we have to root out any progressive ideology of statism and granting powers to the state to subjugate people, whether that be the welfare programs, whether that be the homeland security and intrusion of our privacies and our property and so forth. The case goes on. Again, all of these are symptoms to the problem, non-compliance to the contract. And so I'm pleading with anybody that has the alignment to individual liberty and sovereignty, if you hold your ability to express yourself religiously, or if you hold your speech and your ability to bear arms and to possess property and not be infringed upon a police state or what have you, if you hold these truths and these principles as sacred, then you have to step forward and start unifying. And I apologize. The Republican Party is a mess. It's not my fault. It's not your fault. It's our fault for allowing ourselves to factionalize and start chasing these problems. It's our fault to allow a monopoly of our education system to occur. It's our fault to not be the oversights as states over this Constitution. But as I said in the last segment, and as I say in my promos on this station, that the awakening has been coming. We've been in this process for a long time. The Tea Party, constitutional organizations, even religious organizations are starting to learn and waking up and realizing, hey, they're not complying to the contract. Welcome to the 100,000th Club. You're the one that is really being endowed with the insights that it is about compliance to the contract. It's not about some stupid little agenda or this or that. I don't care about the different planks as long as they're aligning with individual liberty and sovereignty and our founding principles. That being said, I hope everybody takes this to heart as we head towards this election cycle, that we look at unifying instead of allowing ourselves to be a culprit in division. If we allow ourselves to be the culprit in division, then the consequences of that decision can't be put upon anyone else. It has to be put upon you who's chosen and made the deliberate act in not unifying and not coalescing on these principles. It's the same thing with the fact that it is the fault of the states for not holding the general government in tow to the Constitution and holding them in compliance to this contract. And so that's the whole point of this show, is to get these states awake and active and engaged before it's too late. Because I'm telling you, it has happened throughout the history of this nation. It has happened throughout the history of all republics, that the time comes when political expediency requires, or the necessity of political expediency becomes so overwhelming that those in power discard what we hold to be, self-evident, as Thomas Jefferson said, that we have inalienable rights. Well, they're going to discard our inalienable rights, and they're going to be the granters of rights and powers. And that's not the government that we created. And as I started off, we have the birthright to protect this. I didn't mean this show to really get into this rant, but this is so important, and we have to acknowledge this moving into this election cycle, that we cannot be the culprit of not complying to the contract. So, the last article that I covered was a Madison's comment regarding the contractual perspective within the Virginia ratification debates of the Constitution, and how there was this intention of basically drifting the government or the federal government towards statist powers and so forth. The point, in fact, is, and as I said, the powers of the federal government are enumerators. Actually, as Madison said that. And so let me go on with the next comment that Madison has towards this, towards during the ratification debates. I'm sorry, I'm just trying to find my spot of where I left off. And in the contractual point number 3 in my slides, that this assembly views the powers of the federal government as resulting from the compact to which the states are parties as limited by the plain sense and intentions of the instrument constituting the compact. And going on, the states who are parties thereto have the right and are duty bound to interpose for arresting progress. So that's what I left off with last week, that the states have this duty and obligation to interpose and arrest the progress of evil for maintaining their respective limits within that general government and their authorities, rights, and liberties, and protecting our authority, rights, and liberties. So the next statement that I want to point out that came out of Thomas Jefferson in 1798, and this is a contractual point as well. This is when the Sedition Act was passed and signed into law by James Adams, that the several, and this is Thomas Jefferson speaking for the Kentucky, or this is actually the Kentucky legislative body that Thomas Jefferson was leading, and you can kind of hear his words in this, that the several states composing the United States of America are not united on the principle of unlimited submission to their general government, but that by a compact under the style and title of a Constitution for the United States and of amendments thereto, they constituted a general government for special purposes, delegated to that government certain definite powers, reserving each state to itself the residuary mass of their own self-government, and that whatsoever the general government assumes undelegated powers, its acts are unauthoritative, void, and of no force. So Jefferson is clearly stating that the states did not sign up for creating a general government with unlimited powers. He clearly stated that the states signed up for a compact where they created a limited and defined general government where they, the states, had the pleasure and the ability and the reserved rights of doing whatever they felt necessary for their own citizens. If they wanted to have health care, they can create health care. If they want to have one-way streets everywhere, they can have one-way streets everywhere. They have the power to do everything that isn't delegated to the general government. Well, that's the end of this segment. Next week, we'll be going through more citations. Thank you, and God bless.